I got to thank all of you, all the fans here in San Francisco. Road and home, it's been fantastic. I want to thank you all. I got to thank my teammates for their support. Through all this, you guys have been strong, and you've given me all the support in the world, and I'll never forget it as long as I live. Thank you.
Barry Bonds, Mr. 756, and in fact, Mr. 757 after last night's home run, as he is now two ahead of Hank Aaron's former all-time record. This on a week when Alex Rodriguez of the Yankees became the youngest ball player ever to hit 500, and Tom Glavine of the Mets joined the elite 300 win club for pitchers. But also on a week when Michael Irvin was inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame, inspiring a column by William Roden in the Times, headlined "Teaching from His Mistakes." So we'll talk about it all now as we continue our weekly series of visits this month by New York Times sports columnist William Roden. Hi, Bill. Thanks for coming on again.
Hey, good morning, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. And let's start with Michael Irvin, not the household name in New York that these baseball stars are, but we're going to play a clip of him in a minute from that speech and tell our listeners why teaching from his mistakes.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we begin with this. You know, if you're familiar with the NFL casually, you probably know that Michael Irvin is one of the guys who's had his share of off-field problems while he was playing, possession and just a lot of kind of bizarre stuff. But what has always made Irvin kind of an interesting character is that his teammates really loved him. He had this guy, he's one of 17 kids, always had a great heart. And his acceptance, he never thought he'd get into the Hall of Fame, and a lot of people didn't. But his acceptance speech, Brian, was one of the just most touching acceptance speeches I've ever heard of a Hall of Fame, just because, as you'll hear, he apologized to his wife, he apologized to his kids. I mean, it was very few of us, I think, would have the courage on a day when we're being inducted into something to really just kind of lay our souls bare and just apologize and open our fatalities to our frailties up to scrutiny. And it was just really very moving and very rare in an era of sports where, you know, we tend to try to ignore our faults.
So you talk about him possibly not having been inducted into the Hall of Fame, perhaps because of his off-field activities. And here is a little bit of Michael Irvin from last weekend's Hall of Fame induction speech. He's talking about, in this clip, coming home last year to his family after watching last year's Hall of Famers being inducted.
And I doubt it. I would ever have the chance to stand before you today. So when I returned home, I spoke with Michael and Elijah, and I said, "That's how you do it, son. You do it like they did it." I wanted to stand in front of my boys and say, "Do it like your dad, like any proud dad would want to." And at that moment, a voice came over me, and it said, "Look up. Get up. And don't ever give up."
And he also said right around that part of the speech that last year's induction ceremony prompted him not to think so much about football, not to pray that he'd get into the Hall of Fame, but to pray, and he used that word, that he would raise his kids to be a better husband and better father than he's been.
Yeah, it was just pretty, even when I'm listening to the clip again, a hard sports journalist, and you very rarely have that tinge of sort of feeling emotion, but it was just a spectacular moment. You know, I guess all of us who are fathers and husbands, you know, say, "Wow, would I do that?" Now, granted, we probably may not have put ourselves in that position to have to say.
Right,
that.
Right. And was it his off-field stuff, his drug possession and some other things, that was the reason that he may not have gotten into the Hall of Fame? Was he, you know, an obvious choice based on his on-field performance?
Yeah, I think, Brian, that he was pretty much a lock. Had this stuff not happened, I mean, he, you know, the Cowboys won three Super Bowls largely largely because of him, because of, you know, between Aikman and Irvin and Emmett Thomas. So, yeah, I think he would have got in, but there was always this question. He was dismissed as a commentator at ESPN, where he was pretty good, because he had gotten caught in the car, he and his wife, and he had this drug paraphernalia. As it turned out, said he had just taken it from a good friend, turned out to be his brother, because he was trying to get him off of drugs.
That's what they all say.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that it was just a big question whether his off-field stuff would be a roadblock. And you, what you heard was a guy, you know, who was really, really grateful and thankful for getting in.
And you wrote that Irvin represents a sense of realism in an era when we would rather have our sports heroes kiss babies and pet puppies, your words. Does that mean we train our sports heroes to act like politicians?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was listening to the previous segment about the helicopters and stuff.
Yeah.
That's a great segue.
Hey.
You know, I think I was in Cooperstown a couple weeks ago, and I listened to Tony Gwynn and Ripken. And again, these are good guys and all that, but I do think, particularly in baseball and more, the Yankees locker room is sort of a good example of, you know, very good professional post game interviews. Not a lot of highs, not a lot of lows. They'll kind of give you what you want, but rarely do you have the sort of raw emotion that, listen, I'm not this perfect guy, and I think that's what sort of prompted the column. And that sometimes I think that. I think young people, particularly people who have been challenged, they'll learn a lot from a person who stands before them and says, listen, I messed up. You know I messed up, but I pulled myself out of it. And this is how you deal with adversity. I'm not making it up. I'm not a Pharisee. I've been through it. I did it. And this is how you recover. And I think that's just as important, you know, as saying, listen, you know, be like me, be like Mike. I live this perfect life or this good life, and really you examine the life and you realize, you know what, he didn't live a perfect life. You know, that was just the PR part of his persona.
William Roden, New York Times sports columnist, my guest on WNYC. So, you know, a lot of America is wondering today whether Barry Bonds will wind up teaching from his mistakes rather than glorifying himself someday. How much do you share that sentiment?
I've seen a humility in Bonds over the past month or so as he's been approaching.
Oh, now it sounds like Elliot Spitzer.
Yeah.
A sudden conversion to humility. You were right about that segue.
Bonds of the helicopter. No,
let's
not go down that road.
Following A-Rod's helicopter.
Yeah. But no, I think that I've sensed again. You know, you guys like Bonds, guys like A-Rod, but particularly like Bonds, who've scaled a particular mountaintop. Right now, I think because there's so much swirling around him, to use Bud Selig's word, swirling, I'm not sure how candid he can be just yet. But, yeah, I could see in about 15, 20 years that he'll have some pretty interesting lessons to teach about his life, about things he did or may not have done. I guess I just happen to be, I'm really, because I'm in the locker room so much and I hear so much canned stuff, that when you hear people who are really real and who said, listen, you know, I made some mistakes, and but just thank God I came out of it, that means, as I get older, that means more to me than just trying to prop up this.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of manufactured life, like, you know, I didn't do anything. I've never done anything wrong. Do as I do, not as I say, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
But do as I say, not as I do.
We talked about this last week. I mean, frankly, I think you and I are both a little sick of all the Bonds bashing. Since we spoke, he tied Aaron's record off a pitcher who himself had tested positive for steroids, which Bonds never has. It's a baseball problem, not a Barry Bonds problem, I guess you agree. But there are reports this week that Bonds may soon be indicted in connection with the so-called Balco investigation. Do you think that'll happen or know what the charges could be?
I think that they're looking at it. It's so funny that, you know, Bud Selig was back in New York. I mean, the day after, back in New York, meeting with you know, the Mitchell, George Mitchell and the Mitchell investigation.
Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, it reminds me so much of the of Jack Johnson. I think that Barry Bonds is this generation's Jack Johnson. Jack Johnson was the first African American heavyweight champion, and the commissioner at that time, who was then a judge, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, just had it in for Jack Johnson. He thought he was uppity. He was the first black guy to win the heavyweight championship. He could board it with white women. And they ultimately, they got Jack Johnson. They convicted him on something called the Mann Act. It was a very obscure law. And he actually did time. So I think that, you know, when the federal government is on your case, like the federal government is on Bonds' case, if there is something there, and they may get him on perjury, I think that they're going to go to the end of the earth to get him. And I don't think Bonds is relaxing, but I think that if he has any illusion that they're going to ease up, he's wrong. I think they're going to be on his case until they get something, if there is in fact something to get. I think it's unfair. I think it's unfortunate. But
do you think it's unfair if it's there?
Well, if it's there, it's there. But I don't want to make this, again, a Barry Bonds issue. I think that what this investigation, even what The Game of Shadows, is this book by two reporters detailing Barry, they've made steroid use in baseball a Barry Bonds issue. That is what I think is unfair. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like what Curtis Mayfield wrote years ago, if there's a hell below, we're all going to go. And I think that it's such steroid use in baseball was so wide and I think pervasive. If they had a truth and reconciliation hearing in baseball, which I think they should have, if they really want to get to the bottom of this, I think they should do that. But I think that what they're afraid of is that there are going to be so many fish they pull out of the sea, so many popular names, so much stuff. I think they'd rather make this about Barry Bonds, get him, and then close the book. That's what I think is unfair.
New York Times sports columnist William Roden, my guest on WNYC, sports columnist quoting Curtis Mayfield in this conversation. You know, I could never do your job because there's only one sport that I really love and really follow, which is baseball. You obviously are more into the wider world of sports. You talked about Irvin this morning. Obviously, we're talking about Bonds. Would you say that you love baseball and football differently from each other?
Yeah, you know what I love? I love the story. I really love the story. I love the drama. What I loved about, I was at the Canton Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame, and then the Football Hall of Fame.
Right, the two weekends that had the two induction ceremonies.
Yeah, they were back to back. And what I loved about it was just the contrast of having Ripken inducted and Gwynn inducted on the same day that Barry Bonds was going to tie the record, and having Bud Selig clearly being really happy to be in Cooperstown, this kind of idyllic, you know, kind of perfect little setting of baseball's Hall of Fame. So I guess to answer your question, I just love the drama of all this. Tomorrow, for example, at Candlestick Park, there's going to be a huge celebration for Bill Walsh, who was the late San Francisco 49ers football coach who died
this summer.
Yeah, this summer of leukemia, and who's generally, they call him the genius, but who's generally credited with putting the cerebral element in football and designing the West Coast offense. And there's going to be this just tremendous celebration of all these players, all these coaches. And I think probably for many sports columnists, it's really not so much about the game as it is just the drama surrounding the game, and also going to another level, there's a lot of things you could write about in sports, race, sex, gender, that you can deal with in sports that it would be very hard to approach just in sort of ordinary life because people have their defenses up. So I just love, I guess as I get older, I just love the drama of each sport. We're going to have the U.S. Open later this
month
in September.
Tournament.
More drama. Right in New York is going to be the Williams sisters. It's just going to be just great drama. And that's what I love about this industry and this business.
So we've talked about morality and drugs and the legal system. No helicopters, but we just have 90 seconds left. And let me just ask you an out-and-out sports question. Because talk about the cerebral element. You wrote in your column that Tom Glavine, winning his 300th game, gave you an epiphany regarding baseball records. What was that?
I think that record, we talk about Bonds and who's going to be the next home run king. Is it going to be? I think Glavine may be the last pitcher that wins 300 games, because pitching has changed so much, because you've got specialization and people are babying pitchers. I think that record is probably going to be one of the hardest records, one of the toughest records to equal. Glavine may be the last 300 win pitcher.
Which brings us back to the steroids question in a way. You know, does the baseball establishment tweak the game to favor hitting over pitching these days because hitting draws bigger crowds?
That's a great question. But, you know, we always go through these arguments. Before we thought about steroids, you know, we had the arguments, well, they're juicing the game.
The Titan baseball, whatever happened to that?
Yeah. And remember, they lowered the mound. That was a big thing when they lowered the mound, because they said the pitchers just had too much of an advantage. I mean, clearly, I think the home run thing, I think the home run is what makes baseball sing. Though now, I think given everything that we've seen about steroids, they may go back to the higher mound.
Back to bunting and defense? Maybe not. William Roden, New York Times sports columnist. Always a pleasure. He'll continue to join us every Thursday for the month of August. You will be with substitute hosts the next 2 weeks while I'm in a cabin in the Adirondacks without the Yes Network.
No fear. Be nice to them.
And I'll talk to you at the end of the month when I'm back.
All right. Enjoy, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. Bill Roden on WNYC with me, Brian Lehrer.